We get things underway by wrapping up the weekend the best way possible for us by welcoming David Roth. David?
Hi, how you doing?
I'm outstanding. You are the people's choice. Congratulations on a tremendous run all the way to the Funky Four in this year's Downtown Madness, even over your protests.
I'm happy that you brought it up, because I kept thinking about ways that I would accidentally bring up my run to the Final Four, but you doing it on purpose makes it seem weird. Yeah, that still is mind-boggling to me, but I'm very much in your listeners' debt. That was really nice.
People love you on the show, and a little cash doesn't hurt either.
Yeah. Wait. Did I win something?
Oh, no. I paid them cash to vote for you. And
oh,
then, you know,
all right. Cool. Yeah. I was like, wow, this is exciting. You could have, whatever. You'd mailed a Home Depot gift card to my home. It would have been more than enough.
We'll send you down.
That was really nice.
We'll send you a downtown T-shirt. We can do that.
Oh yeah, that would be great.
Wear that with pride.
I don't have much use for a Home Depot, to be honest.
Right, you wear that T-shirt in the streets of New York, boy, people are going to look.
I think there's probably more of a brand presence here than we know, but I'm happy to draw their fire and then have people gloat on Alan Adams' behalf right in my face.
Now, I think, sadly, though, the last one I gave out to a guest was to Susan Collins, and yeah, I want it back at this point, so I'm not sure how that's working out.
Hey, what is the backseas policy on this? I'm trying to think of what I would have to do in order to just have to mail you your... At least she gets to take votes. I would just have to become a really obnoxious...
That would work. So much to talk about today. I hope you've got some time, because I have an agenda. Well, I always have an agenda here today, but I want to start with the fact that Trump's party for the Baylor women's basketball team somehow took you back to having brisket with your grandparents' neighbors. I love that connection.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that's probably unfair to Philly and Ruth, who really were very nice people and lived next door to my grandma and certainly cared more about feeding me than my grandma did. They just didn't really care enough to ask whether I liked brisket before they started giving it to me. And that became, just a solid decade of my life of eating brisket while people nodded approvingly, being like, oh, he's doing a good job, chewing it. I didn't think that was going to be my lot when I was 10 years old, but I think mostly the connection there. I think that food was certainly better than the room temp Chick-fil-A that Trump served to the Baylor women. I'd have to imagine. I mean, congealed meat, the debate that's roiled food communities for time immemorial.
And they look so happy to be there and enjoying spread. It was like a hostage video.
The different tweets and the videos that all the players are putting out where they win a championship. This is a peak moment in anybody's athletic career. And then some guy who keeps getting their names wrong is like, oh, I got some Burger King. It's been there for 48 hours. And you have to be like, thanks. The way that anybody drew it up, I'm sure.
You wouldn't do this for Gino Auriemma, by God.
I feel like you wouldn't, because Gino would put you on blast. I feel like in a lot of ways, one of the real great tensions, and there's a 10-minute video from C-SPAN of Trump doing his thing where he reads off a piece of paper and then periodically ad-libs a few varies, and so many are telling these into the text. But he keeps trying to banter with Kim Mulkey, who is the extremely no-nonsense coach of Baylor. And she's extremely not having it. She's very polite. This is very much a high-powered Texas lady who is in the Oval Office and not for the first time. But, they had some real, you remember, the UK version of The Office?
Yes.
It was kind of, the American one was much warmer. Everybody was much nicer. This was some real Ricky Gervais vibes. And if that's the sort of anti-comedy you're into, I really recommend the video.
Oh, it's great. So you were for one day the hypothetical NBA commissioner, David, and you went with a 4-point shot as your big change to the operation.
Yeah, that was this is a new video idea that Dan McQuaid, my coworker, had. And Dom Cosentino went on the first one and made what I think was actually a very good suggestion, which was that teams could get an extra point if on the kickoff, a kicker successfully boots the ball through the uprights. That would be fun to watch. I got on the subway to go down and shoot the video with basically no ideas in my head at all. And the four-point shot seemed better. I originally had some stuff about we're going to change draft eligibility or whatever, but I figured if the concept is you only get one day as GM and then you can't really be around for the repercussions of whatever bad idea you have, that you might as well go for the gusto. And so the four-point shot was born.
Go big or go home. I like it a lot.
Yeah, it was. Do you remember the Rock and Jock games that MTV used to have? That was basically where the idea came.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
I mean, that's not the ideal model for anything because it was basically like Joey Lawrence missing reverse layups in like 1993. Whatever, anything that could be considered a glory day for the sport. But, you know, my mind goes where it goes.
As a reformed New York Football Giants fan, two words, Daniel Jones. You saw this coming, huh?
Yeah, feels great. This is definitely one of those things that I sometimes will periodically predict something, never because I'm actually prescient or am well-sourced. I want to make clear that that is never the case. It's just that sometimes I think of what the worst but also funniest thing that could happen might be, and then if it feels right, I sort of believe it's going to happen. I sort of felt like that with Trump getting elected president. I definitely felt like that. In terms of the Giants taking Daniel Jones, just because they seem to want, like, there's a certain type of, like, chin-mouth thing that they're looking for quarterbacks. They want them a little jowly. They want them breathing through their mouth. And I think in Jones, they've found a suitable successor to Eli in that regard, and maybe only that regard.
It's fantastic. somebody tweeted, so for the successor to Eli Manning, the Giants have gone with the less charming Eli Manning.
Oh, gosh. And I feel terrible for Jones in some ways because, like, he's just a guy, you know? Like, as is Eli. I mean, he's just kind of, if you saw Eli on the street, you would be like, that guy's like the fifth best attorney in an eight attorney firm, you know? Like, he's not a very imposing dude. And Jones is kind of like a similar vibe, but I mean, now he has to come in and everybody's already mad at him, and like I sort of feel bad for him now. We'll see how I feel once I start watching him throw 4-yard checkdowns every play next year. But
like, he walks into a room and people say, oh, you played at Duke, great. Yeah football though. Oh,
right.
Football.
Yeah, I was like, wow, what's Coach K like? Oh, I saw him on the quad, shorter than you'd think. Yeah.
He seemed busy. Always seemed busy.
Yeah,
you are
a Duke quarterback of my youth too. The Giants drafted a guy named Dave Brown.
That's right. The last time they did it, back in the early 90s, I think.
And they were real proud of themselves then too. They were like, "You wouldn't believe how smart this guy is." Like, he was just rattling off the times table, and then like 4 years later, he's a real estate agent in North Jersey, and like shows how that goes.
There's your future, Daniel Jones. Good luck with that. I'm glad to hear that you continue to be absolutely enthralled with the Stanley Cup playoffs.
I'm doing my best. I feel bad about it. We do, a Deadcast episode on it every year, and Drew is better at, he will parachute in during the playoffs, decide on a team that he likes, or, because he lives near D.C., cheer for the Caps, and attack it earnestly. Hockey was one of the first cuts when I started making these strategic decisions to not pay less attention to sports, but to pay the same amount of attention to fewer sports.
Right.
And so I'm well behind the curve on that. And Lauren Tyson, who's one of our resident hockey knowers at Deadspin, came on the podcast and educated me not just on which teams I should cheer for, but like the fact that the Winnipeg Jets are back, for instance. They're back in the NHL, which I think is great. Columbus has a team, Ohio, and they're fairly good.
And you don't like their logo, right?
I don't care for the logo. It seems like the fan culture there is cool. The last hockey story I wrote a million years ago, it was about a guy that dances at their games. And he was a super sweet guy, and I had a great time with the story, and I've always had a soft spot for them since. I had not paid attention to their logo, and it looks like I'm trying to think of what it is. Like when you're on the highway and sometimes you have to go to one of those like PA rest stop things.
Yeah.
It looks both like the logo for those rest stops and then also like something that you would get on a t-shirt or a hat at one of those rest stops.
Remember that time we went through that rest stop? Yeah, I got the T-shirt. Still in the drawer.
Right. Anyway, yeah, so they're on to the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Congratulations to your T-shirt that just says America on it.
There you go. I see that your mayor is contemplating going the John Lindsay route. I hate this stinking job. Is there one job out there that could be worse than being mayor of New York? Yes.
It's incredible. I love him. Bill de Blasio, America's sweetheart, and my mayor. I don't see him around very much. He kind of has been avoiding New York for like 18 months, which, you know, if I could leave for 18 months, I probably would too, if I'm being honest. But I'm not the mayor, and he is, and that's a crucial difference. And he's really squandered a lot of goodwill by not showing up at work since like 2017. The fact that he now wants to be president of the United States is so mind-boggling to me that I almost find it inspiring. Like, I think in a month it will have come all the way around, and I'll be like, you know, bless his heart. Like, he's living his dream.
I'm looking for, frankly, the three or four people who hold public office currently who don't aspire to be the next president.
It is pretty interesting. I mean, this is like, he would be the 21st official candidate for the Democratic nomination, right?
At least, yeah.
That's a lot. That's like a few more of those, and you have to start like designating guys for assignment when new ones come up.
Right.
Like, that's not how you're supposed to do it. Like, the idea, I mean, for some of them, it just seems like a way to, you know, maybe they don't want to run for the Senate. I wouldn't want to be in the Senate either. It seems like a terrible job. Coworkers are lousy, and the hours are bad. And the idea of, you know, whatever, maybe you think you've got a shot. Who's to say that you can't be president when you consider that there's like a racist game show host that's literally the president of the United States right now? But, man, I think you got to draw the line somewhere, and I think maybe it's Bill de Blasio, the Red Sox fan living under an assumed name who never takes the subway and is the mayor of New York City. Like, that might be too weird. Like, it might be that is weirder than Trump being president.
Well, if you make your announcement and your best hope is that you make the preliminary debate, because you're not going to make the cut for the big one.
There are going to be those again.
Oh, I remember, of course,
from,
yeah.
The Republican side in 2016, the ones that are, it's like, you know, like doors open at 3, like first debate starts at 4, actual debate starts at 7.
Yeah, it's the warm-up, it's the undercard.
It is. It's like the guy that comes out before like a late-night taping, is like, anybody here from out of town? Except for like, that's Representative Eric Swalwell. Really great.
And the guy was the guy from Delaware who's not even in Congress anymore, but remembers that it used to be a pretty good gig.
It's incredible. Yeah, there's the ones that, I guess, like, you have to count Mike Gravel, like a guy that was elected to the Senate in like 1960 or something like that. It really is an inspiring cross-section of delusional Americans.
So I need your expert advice on this as I watch what's developing here with Trump and the White House, the Russia investigation, everything else that's going on. And quite often I think to myself, if this were a movie, well, no one would believe it. But if it were, who would play the various parts? But I want to take a different tack today and say, if we made a movie of this whole thing, who should direct it? And I was thinking, you know, there are some options here. If you get Ron Howard to direct, he's going to play it pretty straight. It'll be relatively close to the actual history. I thought maybe Tarantino, because then you could add some language and gratuitous violence. It could be Christopher Nolan, and somehow the movie ends with Trump leaving office, which would be an interesting take. But maybe Wes Anderson. I don't know. Any thoughts of who might be the best person to direct this bizarre story?
It's a really good question, because I feel like there's several different movies happening within it at any given time. And, you know, there's this sort of like ambient gangsterism that defines the broader Trump aesthetic. I was thinking about this reading the New Yorker story about Michael Cohen earlier this week, where all these guys get together and talk like they're in Goodfellas, but they're mostly just like guys that spend a lot of time in hotels. And so they like sort of, all the talk of like threatening people and like getting tough or whatever, it mostly involves like sending notarized documents back and forth to each other and like calling your buddy on the phone and be like, somebody ought to beat him up. Am I right? Oh, sorry. I got to get off. Like, my wife's here. Like, that sort of thing. So I think there's a Scorsese element, but
oh, yeah.
Abel Ferrara was a guy that came to mind just because he's a completely maniacal New York dirtbag. And I think we'd get like some of the, like if you're making a Michael Cohen movie, I would want Abel Ferrara to direct it. If you're making a Trump movie, Scorsese is the guy that Trump would want to direct it.
Right.
I think in the end, it's probably going to wind up being Adam McKay, right? I mean, because that's like the...
or you bring in Tim Burton so Johnny Depp can play him.
Yes. I mean, I think that Depp would... Certainly, he would love the opportunity to get a crazy new haircut, at the very least.
Exactly.
And then get some face bloat going. It's weird, though. There is this element of it that I find kind of... It is cinematic, but it's a very hard thing to do on film, because there should be this sort of broad sweep to it. But every time I think about what Trump's actual life is like, or what his executive process is like, I get very claustrophobic, because I think he spends a lot of time indoors, he spends a lot of time watching TV, and a lot of time yelling at people about stuff that he doesn't understand, and then sometimes they do it, sometimes they don't, but he's going to stay upset about it. And then, like, but picture a TV that's always on, sunlight streaming through the windows. There's like an ad on television for like, you know, some
a reverse mortgage
gold. You know, that is it, like that is a very difficult sort of vibe to pull off, in part because like it's a very uneasy thing to even be watching.
I picture it being in some ways like when my grandparents were still alive, and at whatever hour of the day and night I would go in the house, they would be sort of half asleep with an episode of Murder, She Wrote on.
Yeah, it is. And I wish if someone, this is the thing that, like, I feel, there's a lot of things that I feel regretful about the way the last few years have worked out. But if Trump had just gone up or down one station on the dial, if it wasn't Fox, if he was just like into, like, there's a network where people just are constantly, like, flipping homes.
Yes,
right?
Sure.
Just like the... Yeah, so maybe he watched that, and then we're fine, and he's less upset all the time and doesn't talk about, like, invading hordes. He just talks about, like, stomping.
Just imagine.
That would be a very blessed timeline.
A simple click of the remote and the world could be a very different place.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be that different. Just one extra push of the button, and yet here we are.
There you go. That might be your book right there when all of this is said and done.
Yeah, the alternate history of Trump getting really into the Food Network, getting like a Guy Fieri haircut and put a bowling shirt on.
Yeah, let me introduce you to my Secretary of State, Bobby Flay. He's a great guy.
Unbeatable. I think that would be great. I think, honestly, like, I think if Trump, even if he were just exposed to more Southwestern flavors in a Bobby Flay style, I think it would help things for him. It'd just be in piles of mush.
No question about it. David Roth, thank you for helping us get into the weekend. No better way. Always great stuff. We appreciate you being with us. Hope your weekend goes well. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
David Roth of Deadspin here on Downtown.